You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida. Almost forgot where I was from.
Did you forget? I'm in Oklahoma. I'm Jamie Jennings, and I am in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, July 21st, episode 3737, brought to you today by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
You know, I've only lived here for 15 years, so give me a break.
You have found Horses in the Morning on a Monday. You're in for an amazing horsey week of laughter, learning, and fun with Glenn and Jamie.
Yeah, I think we've actually lived in Ocala for 13 years.
I was going to say, I'm starting out correcting you with Glenn and Jamie. Jamie is going to just nag you because, like, when we started the show 15 years ago, you were in Kentucky.
Yeah, after 2 years after we moved here in 2012. So that's right, 13 years. I can't believe I've been in Florida for 13 years.
I can't believe we've been doing this show for 15 years. That's insane.
I know. Well, today, speaking on today's show, we're going to learn about how Show Jumping World is helping us use data to analyze how a horse and a rider perform together in the ring, a new twist on things. Plus, there's a new boss over at Trafalgar Square Books, and she's going to stop by to tell us her thoughts and dreams for the future of the top source in equestrian books. And we have a new segment called That Girl of the Month. So we're going to do that. And in the Auditor Post show, we're going to do some random things. You posted something in the Auditor Room that they did a tribute for Dwayne Lucas, right?
I did. And I'd seen this already, you know, right after he passed. It was like the next morning, but I just saw the video again, and I just wanted to make sure everybody saw it. It was so beautiful, and like, you can't watch it without crying. And basically, they ponied out Dwayne's horse and put, you know, his boots in the stirrups and stuff, and let him out, so he was there on the track with him the next morning. And it was just really, really touching, and I just thought that it was worth, if you hadn't seen it yet, to take a look at it. And it was pretty neat. And when you say Auditor Room, that is the Facebook page for the people that are kind of Patreons for the podcast. Also, in the world of horses that Horse Radio Network gets involved in, we have a lot of auditors and listeners who purchased into a horse named Caldera from My Racehorse. And you have some update on Caldera?
Yeah, I'm blaming you for this. So,
oh, God.
So Caldera's been off, and they apparently did did they do a CT scan? What'd they do? I don't know what kind of scan
they did.
But they revealed bone bruising in both front limbs, and they said that's fairly normal, I guess, for racehorses. It's the commonest injury diagnosis in racehorses, and it's not the worst thing. You know, it's not broken or anything. And basically, they said to put them up for 60 days and let them rest for 60 days and try and bring them back again. But that does mean he's not going to be racing for 60 days. But, you know, it's still about the health of the horse. So,
well, you're a little late getting this update because it was a while ago. But I do have a ton of other updates on maybe a few of my horses. I mean, remember,
are they doing better than the horse you talked me into buying?
Well, like, Trust But Verify's working out of the gates. And let's see. Puka 24 is not named yet, but he's hanging out in the pasture growing up. And then we've got Native Brew, who's currently in work. And oh, so fun. I love going through all of these horses. Money problems still on turnout right now.
Still has
now.
Money problems.
Money problems, some problem. And then, of course, bless his heart, Improbable Luck. The one who I was like, this is the dumbest name for a horse. Like, why would you name a horse Improbable Luck? He's been retired.
Oh, no. The name fit. Our rule still stands.
I mean, name him Superman, best horse ever, fastest horse in the world. Don't name somebody Improbable Luck or Money Problem. And I get so frustrated because they let you vote on the names of the horses on My Racehorse, and we get to pick the names and then be like, here's the top three. And it's all embarrassing. And I'm just feel sorry for the horses.
I lost money on that one.
Improbable luck will shortly be gelded.
Yeah, it'll be at your place pretty soon. All right, let's do some daily witties. Well, happy birthday to a couple of our terrific auditors who've been auditors for a long time, Nicole Hatfield and Victoria Valinsky. Happy birthday to both of you. And Jamie, I'm excited to announce that we have a brand new auditor named Geraldine. Welcome.
Hello.
We welcome you and thank you so much for your support.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm so excited to tell you guys this. Okay. So a while ago, it was like back in February or April or something, several months ago, we had Melissa Kitchen on. Yeah. And through A Home for Every Horse and Zoetis, who all of these are connected to Equine Network, they created a Long Live the Horse Care Grant, spearheaded by A Home for Every Horse and handled by Zoetis, who was a fantastic, you know, equine, I guess, like drug company.
Yep,
they
yep,
do a lot of yep. stuff for horses. They had this program that they decided to provide grants to eligible rescues to cover the cost of necessary veterinary procedures. And so like, I sent the information over to Nelda at Horse and Hound Rescue because there is Up and Up, they're certified through every organization, and they were through also certified with the Home for Every Horse. And so I sent her this information. I'm like, they're giving out grants. And I had this horse named Sharp Rocket come to me over a year ago, year and a half ago. And he's one of those, like, when I got on him, I was like, there's something wrong with this horse. You know, like there's a specific feeling when you sit on a horse and you're like, oh, something's off. I mean, I've done 190 racehorses now. So when I sit on them and they don't move out like they should, it causes me to be suspicious. Well, the good news with Horse and Hound is I can tell her that and she will then handle it. And he had severe kissing spine. Completely sound, but when I sat on him and I was like, oh, I'm not feeling good about this. Oh my God. He was granted kissing spine surgery paid for by the Equine Network Foundation's Long Live the Horse Care Grant, spearheaded by A Home for Every Horse, thanks to Zoetis. So basically, Sharp Rocket, a horse that came to me, ended up getting this grant to go get kissing spine surgery. And he had the surgery and all of it went fine. It went great. They go after surgery. They have to have, you know, be in a stall and have stall rest and get the sutures out. And it's like a really big deal to have this surgery. And I'm just so grateful that through this podcast, we were able to help a horse.
Hey,
now,
hey, I didn't even know any of that.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that cool? So full circle, guess who arrived this weekend for his rehab? Sharp Rocket.
At your place?
Yes, he came back to me because they need somebody. It's pretty extensive physical therapy that they need. I mean, you can't just do kissing spine surgery and be like, cool, we're good. Like it has like a whole lot of things. And fortunately, Horse and Hound is like, cool, we'll send the horse to you. So not only am I learning kind of how to do this and using this horse as like an educational tool, I'm able to, with my pulse machine, PEMFM, I have red light therapy now. I'm getting like all holistic, like I'm trying to heal everything, you know, kind of taking my business in that direction. And so how cool to have Sharp Rocket come and be able to do some of my like therapy modalities on him. We started doing some stretches. I've been going through, this will come up, hopefully this week when we do our horse health segment. I've started taking an online course about how to help your horse therapeutically for basically for back issues. So I'm doing all this and I've got this horse that I get to do. So this morning we started walking over poles yesterday and I realized that's probably a bit much. So we're going to bring it down a little bit and start doing some stretches. And so one of the things that they talk about doing is carrot stretches, which is, you know, you hold the carrot and you get the horse to reach around and grab for the carrot and they stretch and they get the carrot. Yeah, his horse hates carrots. It's like the worst. They hates Sharp Rocket, hates carrots, wants nothing to do with them. So I'm like, great.
Of course he does.
This is fun. I've been trying to condition him to eat carrots and he won't touch them. Like, it's the worst. So then I got these little gastric ulcer cookie things. And you guys know, with my certification with Monty Roberts, like, we don't give horses treats. But I'm like, you know what? This is like a different time. He's going to have this therapeutically. And so I'm having to give him all these cookies. So I'm getting him stretched around and giving the cookies. And then through my osteopath, she taught me this like way to activate the top line of the horse by doing this. I'll try to film it later and post it for you guys to see. But basically, between the pelvis and the sacrum, you kind of dig your fingers in and scratch, and you can see the muscles on the top line of the horse activate. And I would imagine that it's fairly uncomfortable for a horse that just had kissing spine surgery to have this muscle activated. So I was like, I'm going to be really careful. I had the lead rope on, had the line on, and I was like, I'm going to reach up here and I'm going to scratch, but I'm right next to the horse if you were to choose to cow kick. And so I'm having to be fairly careful and I'm a little nervous about doing this. And he's 17 hands. So there's that too. So I'm reaching way up and I'm scratching his back. This horse got a boner, like leaned into it. Like, oh my God, keep doing that. I was like, what are you? Why are you doing that? I texted Melder and she was like, that would only happen to you. I'm like, he really, really likes it. So we will continue our scratches and our stretches and all of our therapy. And he's going to get pulsed
only
today.
On this
so.
Show. You get this kind of quality entertainment.
I mean, let's be real. The therapy is working. He's quite enjoying it. He liked it better than walking over poles yesterday. That's for dang sure. So
I love this whole story from beginning to end.
Like,
I just do. I just love that it, you know, all the worlds came together to see this happen.
I'm so happy that this happened. And then to have the horse back for rehab and then to be able to do this and I'm learning so much and I'm able to kind of learn all these different things and ways. So we're going to have, hopefully, the woman that I've signed up for the course with is going to come on and talk to us. Hopefully Wednesday, we're trying to get it handled. So, and it's just like, it's really cool. I'm really excited. I'll not talk about that till it's happening. But yeah, I'm really impressed. And Sharp Rocket looks great. And he's at the bottom and you're just going to work him up. And so every day is going to get better and better and better. And this is my most favorite thing to do is some rehab and therapy and those kinds of things. So I'll keep you guys posted on how Sharp Rocket is doing. But thanks so much to Long Live the Horse and Home for Every Horse and Equine Network Foundation and Zoetis for like doing all this and Nelda getting all the paperwork done, which I'm sure is a lot, and getting the surgery done and how cool he gets to come back and have some therapy.
Yay! I love all of that. That's terrific.
Thank you.
Well, there's something else we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about dogs, but that's going to be a little bit later in the show. Right now, we need to mention wormflooring.com now does your trailer roof. Leaky roofs are a very common problem in horse trailers and RVs. Worm Flooring's revolutionary silicone-based coating creates a barrier against heat and wet. It seals your roof so that it doesn't leak anymore, and it reflects back nearly 90% of the UV rays. And right now, with our heat index, both days over the weekend was 110. So I can't imagine a trailer. It must have been 150. So I ditch the duct tape and buckets. Invest in long-lasting peace of mind with Seal and Chill. It's applied by pros for a flawless finish. It's only $7.50 per square foot. You can find a dealer near you at wormflooring.com. That's WERM flooring.com. Well, we have a very special guest on today, something that you all have been wondering about for a couple of months, because most of us have heard that Trafalgar Square Books, the place where all the horse books come from, was sold. And our friends over there, especially Martha's been on the show, Rebecca's been on the show, that I've been friends with them for 18 years, and we've dealt with Trafalgar for 18 years since I started the network. And it had been sold, and we have a brand new owner, and Neely is on. Her name is Neely Olson, and congratulations, I guess. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, obviously, the history of Trafalgar. It had to be a little intimidating.
Absolutely.
Because they are known as the horse book place, and you know, there was a whole conversation in our superfan group about, God, I hope she continues it.
Yeah.
and basically doesn't screw it up. So no pressure.
No kidding. Well, it's certainly a legacy that I'm very much aware of and very protective of. I'm also a horse girl who has read Trafalgar Square books, have used them with my own horses for a long, long time. And very near and dear to my heart is the Trafalgar Square mission of producing books for the good of the horse. Every step that I've walked through the horse world has been with that mission sort of in mind already. And so the ethos of Trafalgar Square Books very much aligns with my own mission, I guess, in the horse world.
I didn't realize until I saw the press release that they'd been around for 40 years.
Yes. Yes.
How many books have they published?
Oh, God, I don't know that, but I do know that Martha, like, that was her first job out of college. It's truly, like, built in her image, and Caroline, the founder, her image. And, of course, Becca is just brilliant and has edited all these books so brilliantly for so long that I think that's why it's been able to be around for so long.
Did you have a history in journalism? Or, you know, what is your history?
Yeah, so I have an MFA from the University of Kentucky. My MFA was in fiction, but I also did a long side quest project in nonfiction where I wrote research-informed memoir type of essays about the horse world, my relationship with horses. Before that, I had a BA in creative writing. And while I was working in racing during my 20s and 30s, the whole time I've always been writing, I have been editing, I wrote all kinds of in different genres. And then by the time this job came across my transom, I had been in the process of building my own editing business. I'd been working with writers at the Carnegie Center. I taught undergrad writing at the University of Louisville. So it was really sort of like the dream job to combine my two passions of working with horses and writing, working creatively and telling stories about the horses. So,
well, it sounds like you're qualified for this. Sounds like you're...
Well, thank you. Yeah, I certainly feel... I recognize that it's a large task, but it does feel like very much in my wheelhouse.
It was interesting that you were on the thoroughbred side for a long time. Working at different tracks, or were you... What was your position there?
Yeah, so I was an exercise rider. I started with Carl Nasker. Yeah, I started with Carl Nasker and Ian Wilkes in 2007, the year they had Street Sense. So, yeah, my first job on the track was working with a Kentucky Derby winner. And I just thought, well, this is fantastic. This is great. I'm just going to keep doing this. And I was really lucky. I got to work for them for a number of years. And then I went out to California and I worked for Kristen Mulhall at Santa Anita and Hollywood Park. I'm that old. I worked at Hollywood. And then came back here, rode at Keeneland while I was getting my MFA. I've gotten to work for a lot of really great horsemen and learned a lot from a lot of really wonderful people across a broad spectrum in racing. Yeah, and then I have two of my own OTTVs who I collected along the way. And with them, I do a lot of like R-plus training, liberty, consent-based training, all that kind of good stuff.
Jamie, didn't you ride at Keeneland? Weren't you? Is that where you did exercise riding?
I did. I galloped to Keeneland too. I think she's a bit younger than me.
when were you at Keeneland?
Oh gosh, 96, 97.
Oh, cool. 98.
Yeah. So back when I was young and stupid enough to do it. And what you did was kind of what I did, which is like, how can I be around horses and not try to die every day? So like, you've done this.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I love being on the track and being around the horses. And now I'm able to have a couple of my own that I can enjoy in a less, I don't know, professional setting.
In a less,
enjoy them.
I would say probably like a less endorphin inducing kind of thing, because there's nothing more fun than galloping a racehorse. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's,
I tell you what. Yes. Yeah, it really is. And I've long been thinking, like, as soon as I get my feet on the ground here, maybe I can go and get on a couple in the mornings before I put on my, you know, editor hat instead.
She needs that adrenaline. Here we go.
Once it's in your blood, it's in.
Yeah, that's true. But I also have some OTTBs, so I kind of get it. So with that kind of knowledge, armed with a lot of racetrack stuff, is that going to become more of a focus for Trafalgar, like doing more of the racehorse type stories and books?
Well, you know, like, what we're looking for is quality content from reputable people who have done their homework, who want to publish books that align with our mission, like I said, of being for the good of the horse. If that's a thoroughbred book, fantastic. If it's in another direction, what we're really trying to do is reach horsemen across different disciplines. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about, and probably it could be from being a thoroughbred person, is I'm really interested in seeing how we can get different disciplines to connect with one another and find common ground and find, you know, I think that's a path toward more welfare towards all horses when we can connect disciplines. So I'm really interested in looking for content from all across the horse world.
Gotcha.
How does somebody, so if somebody wants to write a book or has, you know, started writing a book, how do they, you know, do they just contact you? What do they do?
Yeah. Well, my email address is on the Trafalgar Square website. We also have some submission guidelines on there that I would encourage folks to look at. But yeah, like, in terms of if somebody has an idea for a book and they want to reach out, the first step is to, this is my writing, I'm putting on my writing coach hat, but the first step is to really get clear about what it is that you want to say and just sit down and write the book that you want to write. And then I would say, go back and look and see, who is my audience for this now? And then how do we shape that? And that's where I come in as your editor, is to say, okay, what are you trying to say here? And how can we help you say that to the right people so that message reaches those people?
Well, and do you see any major changes from what they were doing before to what you want to do now?
You know, the mission is the same. The science changes, the culture changes, and what people want in relationship with evolving behavioral science, say, is changing. And so I try to keep up with that. And I think that's always been the mission of Trafalgar.
It's one of the things about Trafalgar and what we've had, you know, 100 of your authors on over the years is that there's a variety of books. It's not just all one thing. It's not just all training.
Exactly.
It's not, you know, there's just such a variety. And that's why we've enjoyed working with you all these years, is we can talk about different things and not just, okay, this is what you do to train for this specific thing.
Yes, exactly. Like, right now I'm looking at, we just had a book come out called Greyhound about trotter, a trotting horse. And it's a beautifully done historical book. And I'm really interested in that. I think, horse history is an incredibly fascinating subject to get into. And so when we find good books like that, we want to be a part of that, getting that story out into the world too, you know? So not just the practical books, but the memoirs that folks want to read. Tick Maynard has a new one coming out that I'm really excited about as well. So yeah, we're definitely interested in publishing across the genre spectrum as well.
I was just going to ask you, what's coming out soon? Tick's the next book?
Yeah. Tick's next book is coming out, starting in the middle. That's one that we're really excited about. One that I'm very excited about is called Unwanted by Christina Keim. It's about the unwanted horse crisis in the U.S. What happens when we have horses with nowhere to go, and how any horse can end up in a bad situation, and how is, you know, how are we holding that conversation now?
You know,
And,
you know, it's interesting. We've done this show for so long, and we keep saying that we learn things, you know, we're at almost 4,000 episodes. We learn things every time we do it. You're in the same boat. I mean, you're editing these books, and you're learning all along the way, too.
Yes, absolutely. I was copy editing a dressage book. It's actually a reprint of Dressage 101, one of Trafalgar's longstanding titles. And I sent a message to my trainer, and I said, I have been dressage pilled. Teach me everything that I can learn about dressage today. So we've started doing dressage lessons with my ponies now because of that. So And that's just one thing, you know, one topic. Like I said, with the history books, you learn all about that. And
look, your mission's already working. You're doing dressage. Your mission was to, you know, our mission statement for the Horse Radio Network is uniting the horse world one show at a time. And so your mission is the same, uniting the horse world one book at a time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. Well, I feel better now. I hope everybody else feels better that Trafalgar's in good hands. You know,
yes,
a lot of people, some people know, but some people may not, that there was always a joke, and I always joked with Martha and Rebecca about the fact that all the books were kept in this cold, dank cow barn in Vermont. That's where the warehouse was in a cow barn in Vermont. I assume the books have been moved out of the cow barn now.
Yes, it's sort of the end of an era. After 40 years of being in this gorgeous old barn on this farm, the books are now going through the Simon & Schuster warehouse. It's one of the things that,
it's a little cleaner.
One of the things,
upgrade.
Potentially a little, and hopefully folks can get their books a little bit faster.
Well, that's terrific.
But Martha was, they were good about getting them out.
Neely, congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure chatting with you all. I've been looking forward to it.
We're going to look forward to working with you for another 15 years.
Yes, likewise.
Your horse's health deserves the highest standard of quality. That's why Nutramax, the makers of Cosequin, maintains their own world-class manufacturing facilities in the United States, where they far exceed what is required of supplement companies. Nutramax works with top universities and researchers in their fields to make sure your horse has nothing but the highest quality supplements. With the mission of improving the lives of people and their horses, each product is backed by more than 80 quality checks and guaranteed to meet label claims so you can purchase with confidence. With over 30 years behind the Cosequin name, you can rely on Cosequin for when performance matters. Visit Cosequin.com to learn more.
Well, Jamie, we have restricted actually the number of apps and different websites that we bring on the show because we've interviewed so many over the last 15 years, and a lot of them are the same as the others. And they just kind of got to be repetitive. Well, Adam contacted me. He had something that I thought was a little bit different. This is an app, a website that does something a little differently than the other one. So Adam Enger is here. He is from Dallas. Hi, Adam.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. And you have something called Show Jumping World. All right. Tell us how it's different and what you guys do.
Yeah. Thank you for the time today. We definitely feel like we have a product that is really something that's needed in the show jumping and hunter world. We have the luxury of taking show results from prior shows and putting it together in a readable format for our riders and trainers. We really want to see what data has to show about a prior show, as well as how we can let that data be utilized to really help us train more efficiently at home. Because we've come to the conclusion at Show Jumping World that it's not all just about blue ribbons. It's really about looking at prior shows. Are you improving in certain areas? And really using that as an additional data point in your everyday riding and training.
So what kind of indicators does it look for in the show results?
So the main ones we kind of start with, which we actually thought was rather interesting, is the gender of the rider and the horse itself in correlation to how they place at an average height.
Ooh, so, I can't wait to hear this.
Jamie's 5'2", so
excellent. Yes, it's really interesting, right? So as we all know, a lot of horses we are importing from Europe here in the United States, and there definitely is a different riding style for a European rider than there is here in the United States. There's a different training methodology, and that's all good. But what we've noticed is that some horses are much more receptive to a certain gender on their back as it relates to average faults at particular heights, as well as clear rounds. So what we started with was correlating that, looking at the gender, looking at even the gender of the horse, right? So it's not just the rider, it's the horse itself. So that was kind of our first data point we looked at. And then what we started to do was looking at it geographically, where a horse might do really well in Texas, right? But maybe they don't do so well in California, right? So moving zones, if you will, right? So we kind of correlated a map looking at all the USHA zones and said, okay, as this horse moves further west, this is a completely made up example, but because there's more, you know, different climate, different change, different travel patterns, the horse is not showing as well. So that was one that we started looking at. It was interesting, but I think we had to take that a step further and really look at the usage rate. So usage rate is something where we're looking at the number of riders in a particular class and the number of times that individual horse is shown over a show week. And when you combine that together with how far that horse is traveling, you'll see a direct correlation to how often it is jumping clear and how its podium finishes are affected by those additional data points.
This is interesting because I think racing has been doing this kind of thing with racehorses. And, you know, that's they do look at all of that when they decide when that horse is going to race again, right? So it's kind of taking that and putting it in the show jumping world.
It exactly is. And what we're trying to do here is never take place of a trainer, right? Or just take place of how a rider feels on the back of their horse. But just give them those additional data points, because I think so many times, you know, you might be getting third or fourth place at a local show here in Texas. But as you travel to WEC, right, I think so many people are looking at it and saying, well, did I place? Well, maybe you didn't place, but you're also showing in a much larger class. You're also showing in a much larger venue, right? So taking that into context as well, we feel is very important to just understanding how you're progressing as a rider, as well as how that horse is doing for you at that current show.
And what kind of reports is it spitting out? I assume charts and graphs and that kind of thing?
I mean, I want to know, like, girls versus boys versus mares versus geldings. Do girls do better with mares? Do boys do better? How's it? Where I'm dying to know all of this.
Yeah, so what we do right now is we can take a horse show record and we create an individualized website for each one of those horses. So the cool thing is, even if you're not a user of ours, you can share a report, especially if you're wanting, you know, to get another rider's perspective on how you're doing. But what we do is we give you the gender information, right? The dom, the sire, the dom sire. So you kind of can see the correlation of the lineage of the horse. We then give you a nice map of the US and break that down by zone to show their average placing. We then do a line graph of showing average placement by gender of the rider for that horse, as well as some bubble graphs for clear round percentage and podium finishes.
And then we really mess with people when they're trying to sell their horse.
Well, I was going to ask you about the selling and buying. Is it good to be good for that, right?
That's why the funny thing is, I grew up riding horses and showing. We'll use that loosely. It was walk, trot, canter back in the day for me, and playing hockey. And my parents said, you know, you've got to choose one. We're not in the, you know, we're not going to afford both sports. So I did hockey, and long 18 months ago, I got back into show jumping, learned to canter again, and bought my first horse kind of without anyone helping me. And that's kind of what spurred this, right? So I think so many people are buying horses just off their own eye or off what a current trainer is telling them that they need. So that was really what we were trying to solve first, was making sure that someone can look back at a horse and see kind of the Carfax of it, if you will, right?
I love it.
You can see, I mean, another thing that we're really looking at is a 42-day gap analysis, right? So we can look at a show record and tell you if there's a gap greater than 42 days, because that's kind of the average we're seeing, and seeing if potentially that horse is hurt, if for some reason they no longer are showing that horse. But it's not so much guaranteeing this, it's just opening up the conversation and asking the why, right? So why was this horse not showing? And we actually are taking that a step further now. So if you're down to your last two horses, we'll actually allow you to compare them head to head. So we'll put them on one single printout, and you'll have all of their starts, how many classes they actually finished, a breakdown by starts by height. And you can also even see, we have an AI prompt that looks at temperament trends, right? Where they're most comfortable at based on data. And then you have that third piece of information as far as you riding the horse, what your trainer says. So you make sure you can make an informed decision on the horse, right? Because we all know that every horse might show or jump many more classes than another, but you never really know that unless you kind of dig through all the records. So what we're trying to do is compile all that onto a single view and make it very user-friendly for someone to kind of consume that information.
It's an equibase for show jumping, Glenn.
Yeah, basically. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, because what you're talking about, when I work with a lot of off-the-track thoroughbreds, and when I go back through to see kind of how their life is and has been, I'm like, why was there a 3-month or a 6-month gap in between? Obviously, there was potentially an injury in there, or they got sold or whatever, but you can kind of start to deduce a little bit more and ask the right questions, which I think is, and when you ask the questions, you might get an honest answer, but you might not. And at least you'll have some data to back that up.
Exactly. Exactly.
I want to know how a hockey guy got into data analysis. That's what I want to know.
And I found out, as we talked about before the show, he's an OU grad. So I'm just glad OU is making waves in the horse world. I love it.
Oh, I love it. You know, it's one of those things where every other sport, right, there's data to back it up, right? I mean, you can go look on ESPN, for example, right? And, you know, there's starts, there's finish, there's wins, right? There's all this data. And as we continue to want to grow the market, I think so many people are infatuated watching these Grand Prix, right, under the lights. They're very excited about the hype, but I wouldn't say the normal individual fully understands or appreciates even how high those horses are actually jumping and what it takes to do that day in and day out. And I think having these metrics, like, you go to a show, right? And it's, you know, they're got a Grand Prix and everyone's like, oh, this is so-and-so mare. This rider's been riding this horse for 6 years. Well, that's awesome. But how cool would it be if they had our reports with them and kind of could give you some statistics on what their clear round percentage is, how they show in this particular region, how are they doing in the last 6 months? How much money have they won, right? Like, let's continue to show the amazing feats these combinations have been doing, right? And really start to engage the outside audience, because I think people are hungry for data. I think numbers really allow people to have an appreciation for what's being done by both of these athletes. And I really feel like it would help grow the sport tenfold.
So how does it work? Do I so let's say I have five horses I'm showing. I sign up with you. Do I have to provide all of the, where, you know, where do you get the data is my question. Do I have to provide it as the user, or do you find it, or is it magic?
So right now on the U.S. side, we have to be provided the data by a rider or a trainer. We can't actually go out. There's no API in place with USEF that allows us to just actually obtain the data. So we actually have to be provided the data in a PDF form, and then we essentially consume that data and then put it into the readable formats. And then we compile that against our algorithms that we've built internally, as well as our AI prompts to come out with responses for your reporting mechanisms. And then we're also working with partners over in Europe to really bring back the lineage, right, as well, and looking to find ways to enhance the reports even further by putting prior ownership, right? So you can see how many times this horse has passed hands, maybe potential trainers that have helped train this horse. Because you'll also notice, and we found this out quickly, because we can actually pick a particular time frame you want us to analyze the results. But we were finding those results started to become extremely skewed, especially the clear round percentage, because maybe that horse was jumping down a class or two classes for a period of time. So what we started doing was actually adding all of the rider's information as well into our statistics and show the average height a rider was jumping at, as well as what their clear round percentage is and jump starts. So you can really get a clear picture as, okay, is this horse more receptive to a professional, or is this horse really amateur friendly, right? Because I think so many times you go online and you see a sales ad for a horse, right? And like, it's the same seven sentences, right? And it's, oh, this horse did well in this area and this horse did well in that area. Well, why don't you just have a data platform that can show this, right? And people can make their own understanding of what the data is rather than you trying to entice them through sentences, right? Because I'll admit it, I comb through sales horses almost daily, right? Just to kind of see what's going on.
You and every other horse person in the world, right?
Exactly. And like, to me, it's just like, let's put something much more consumable, right? And like, make it make sense. Because I mean, some of these horses, I mean, we know are six figures, right? That people are riding around. And I'm not saying that the trainers are wrong, right? I think the trainers are extremely important. We, again, never want to replace them, but
There's some inherent bias there, right?
Yes, I mean, right? Exactly. Yeah. You're right. And just kind of, you know, it's double check that the six figures you're about to spend makes sense for you. And this is a great story. I guess I'll bring this up. I wasn't going to, but I think this makes sense. So there's a horse here in Texas that only showed in Texas, right? And it It was jumping the meter 50s, right? But once a week. This horse was sold and it was started traveling and did the circuit down in Florida, right? Did Wellington, did Ocala. And that horse's usage rate went up, right? So, of course, the more it was being ridden, the less effective it was at higher heights. So they started dropping that horse down instead of doing a meter 50 once, right? It was doing maybe the meter 30, meter 35. Well, that horse, because of what was going on, right, in all the travel and all the additional usage, was finding that it wasn't being as successful. So there was nothing wrong with the horse, right? It just wasn't a horse that was meant to be jumping at those high heights for a long period of time. It was really just excelled once at a certain height. And I think what we can show is it's an amazing horse, but it's not a horse that wants to travel 14, 18 hours in a trailer, jump 4 or 5 times a week. It's not going to be able to perform. And I think, sadly, that horse has now already been sold again. And no fault of the rider, no fault of the horse, but it's just like, I think if we would have had that data available sooner, that we could have seen, hey, this horse only shows once a week. Looking at our zone map, it never shows outside of this particular zone. So you need to take that into account, that if you do start traveling with it, it could affect its ability to jump clean at higher heights continuously.
Well, I think this kind of thing is, it's finally coming to the horse world. You know, I always said we were a couple of years behind in the horse world technologically. You know, you're doing now what other disciplines or other sports have done already, and I'm glad you're doing it. And it's starting with show jumping and hopefully go into all of the other disciplines as well. And this is also a place, I know AI scares people, the crap out of people. And to be honest, Adam, Jamie and I have kind of enhanced that because we've done some things with AI that has scared the crap out of people. But I think AI in this case, it helping to analyze that data after you put it together, is where AI is going to be most useful.
Exactly.
It really is, because it can take data that, you know, we can look at and go, okay, yeah, I sort of see that. It can take that and very quickly analyze it 1,000 times more than we can. So I do think AI built into these kind of models would be perfect. And the other thing I would love to see, and I doubt this will ever happen, but I wish you luck, is that the USEF gets to the point where they allow you to import this data, or you and others like you, to actually import data. But they're so siloed, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But who knows?
We can hope, right?
Maybe they'll become modern someday. I love this. Show Jumping World, you can check it out. It's a great website. Go to showjumpingworld.com. Your website's very well done, by the way.
That's all the team in London. Thank you so much.
Sure. Yeah, you have a good team. And good luck. I love that you're doing this. I love that somebody's out there trying to modernize the horse world. I think it's great.
Thank you both. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Are you confident that your saddle truly fits? What's often mistaken as behavioral resistance in a horse may, in fact, be a response to pain or discomfort caused by poor saddle fit. Schleza's comprehensive 80-point evaluation includes both static and dynamic assessments conducted by a highly trained team of certified professionals. Schleza experts are equipped to evaluate any brand of saddle, applying a rigorous biomechanical and anatomical approach that examines spinal clearance, shoulder freedom, saddle support area parameters, and overall symmetry between horse and rider. Knowing how your saddle fits and what can be done if it doesn't is your key to a horse's health, comfort, and performance. Book your appointment today at schleza.com. That's schleese.com. I don't want to be
that girl, that girl, that girl. Oh my gosh, it's time for a new segment called That Girl of the Month. And for those of you who don't know what that girl is, I'm raising my hand because I am that girl. But we've all been that girl in situations, okay?
This whole thing started because of you, because you've always been that girl.
Being that girl is like, it's when you're doing something that everybody's like, oh, it's that girl. So I think maybe the first time you ever dubbed me that girl, I was warming up when my horse Jet at Galway Downs in the show jumping. And there was, you know, the show jump arena, which didn't have a fence, but there were people sitting all around the arena. And I jumped him over a warm up fence and he took off bucking and we ran into the crowd. So all these people had to like duck for cover and run away because like, It's that girl.
It's that girl. Like that is that girl right there.
That is the epitome of that girl. When you're the one who trips and falls in the middle of a restaurant, you know, while everybody's looking all classy, it's because you tripped over your high heels because you never wear heels because you're in riding boots. You're that girl.
Your horse gets loose at the horse show and you know, wrecks everybody else's little camp spot. That you're that girl.
You're that girl. Yep. If whatever it is that makes
you can be that boy too. That we're not discriminating here.
No, but it's horses and
95% of our listeners are girls. So
we seem to be that girl. I mean, you've probably been at that girl.
I have been at that girl. We've all been that girl.
Let's not gender identify that girl. It's just that girl. And a guy can be that girl too. Okay. So let's be equal. Okay. So being that girl is exactly what I said. That girl. So we ask our listeners what is one time that they've maybe been that girl. So
we're going to try and do this once a month, like we do a question first world problems. So
if you become that girl, put it in your brain and write it down or something and make sure you let us know when you've been that girl.
All right, let's get started. Kayla sent posted one. 1 year I showed at the local county. This is a perfect that girl, by the way. This explains that girl. 1 year I showed at the local county fair. I came in the morning to my mayor's stall and was met by a very sweet man at my stall that informed me that my mayor had opened her stall the night before and she was found at 2 a.m. under the Ferris wheel. After leading them on a wild chase through the giant midway, she was caught. That's that girl right there.
That's that girl. You're that girl. And oh my God. Horse.
that's a relation to Zeus.
It is. So this can also be that girl because it doesn't have to be horse related. Sabrina, I've been that girl. She said, I was paddle boarding and I realized that my rum runner, which is like a frosty rum drink, fell off her board while she was paddle boarding and it was floating upside down in the lake. So what did she do? She fished it out. She drank the rest of it. Yeah, yes!
Can't let it go to waste. I assume it had a lid on it.
I mean, what's a little lake water among friends? What could possibly go wrong?
Yes, you're that girls don't have to be horse related because we all have done it at all times. Taylor, I love this one. Taylor, we love Taylor. And Taylor is the one that we followed through her sad adventures in the hospital and all of that. She's doing pretty good now. But she had just gotten married and all the thing. We followed Taylor's life, I think. She said, I wore my new protective vest on the airplane because it wouldn't fit my carry-on.
I get it because I was that girl when I was checking that Western saddle that Pat Roberts gave me. And I show up and I Amazoned a case. So it was in this big saddle case and it's like so heavy and I'm going to lug it into where I'm going to check my bags. And I put it up on the counter and the lady goes, what the hell is that?
I want to know if they thought you were wearing a bulletproof vest at TSA and if you had to prove
that
it wasn't.
I know, right? I mean, what's going on here, Taylor? Yeah. Why are you hiding from the law, waiting to be shot at?
That girl.
Elizabeth wrote in and she said, I was that girl slowly lowering herself off the side of her galloping 15 one-hand Welsh cop because the bit broke and I had no intentions of finding out what happens when he realized that he had no bit or bridle. I slid down his left side until I could sort of safely drop down to the embankment. My daughter was behind me driving her cob, wondering what the heck I was doing. I let go, tucked and rolled, and was fine. He carried on and stopped over the hill to eat grass. Took the spare halter off the carriage and had to drag him home. She laughed and laughed and laughed. I was 63 at the time, but at least had enough to walk home. I guess she hopped on the carriage.
She hopped up for a ride. Smart move, though. Probably wasn't going to end well. So
I always say, actually, never bail. I always tell people, never bail. I'm like, because if you bail, it will always hurt. Not in this situation, apparently. No. She was.
The horse was galloping without a bridle.
How fast does a little Welsh cob gallop anyway?
Oh, you've been on ponies. They can go pretty fast when they want to. When mine's bolting in the cart, seems really fast. It really does. Mary said this. Well, let's see. This past month, I managed to tear a hole in the side of my truck tire, which means I had to buy a new tire. Then I managed to get a flat tire on my side-by-side. It was able to be fixed. Then I drove over a rough area under the dove weed with my riding mower and tore the belt off. Oh, God. Those things always happen in threes. And lastly, I realized while I was mowing, a rock flew out and shattered the window in my husband's car. Oh, my God. You can need to get off that lawnmower. I'm not doing so well with machines. I think I'll stick to horses. That's a bad week with machines. That really is. And your husband's really pissed. Doesn't want you mowing anymore either.
Was it the other Mary? Okay, so I think this is the last one.
Yep.
For this month. Okay. I have more questions than answers, really, but I'll just read it as written. Mary says, I showed up to do a mounted patrol session without my shirt.
Does that mean she didn't have a shirt on, like, or the right shirt?
Were you naked? It was left hanging on a knob in my house. So then I had to run quickly over to the police station where there might be spares. Oh, maybe this is like she has to have a specific shirt.
Oh, a police shirt. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So she had to run over the police station with horse and trailer in tow. I found parking for the horse and trailer three blocks away, parked comically illegally given that I'm doing mounted patrol for the police. Then literally ran the three blocks to the police station, found a shirt, but it had no badge on it. Found a safety pin for said badge. I ran back three blocks to the trailer, got to the fairgrounds, thought I was good, then realized I'd forgotten my hoof boots for my horse. I didn't tell anybody. I gave everybody a sideways glance as I was forcing these two small boots onto his feet. I made everyone late, and I'm the instructor.
That's that girl right there.
Yes, that's girl. Now, I will tell you, I do relate to the shirt thing, which is probably why my brain went when it did. So when I lived in Arizona, I lived in this like community neighborhood with like all of your, you know, there's like a grocery store in the neighborhood, a dentist office, and I had a dental appointment, and I get like high anxiety with dentists, so he prescribed me a Valium. He was like, just take this and then come to the appointment. Well, Chad was at work, and I was like, what could possibly go wrong? I'll just walk to the dentist. It's like half a mile away. So I take the Valium. I'm like, this is gonna be a fun walk. I take the Valium, and I'm like, and it's Arizona, so it's freaking hot, right, and sunny. So I take the Valium, I wait about 10 minutes, and I go to walk out the door, and I get down the driveway and make a left on the street, and I see my neighbors that I don't know them, but they're across the street, and they're watering she's watering her plants, and she just turns and looks at me and, like, jaw down. I was so high on the Valium that I forgot to wear a shirt out the door.
Did you have a bra on?
Yeah, I had a bra on. I walked outside in a, not a sports bra, like a real person bra. Well, so I can't pass off as I'm exercising. It was like a bra. Like, this is clearly a bra. And I remember I was like, oh God. Oh God. And I ran back inside and I had to call a neighbor, somebody else to come pick me up. I was like, clearly I can't walk up to the dentist office because I can't even walk up with a shirt on. I need help. So I get it, Mary. At least it sounds like you were wearing a shirt. Unless you weren't, which I need to follow up on that. If you
I doubt Mary was taking a Valium before she became the instructor for the mounted police. You didn't either.
You know, it happens.
That's funny. Well, that's what that girl is. So we'll post that again next month, and we'll do another round of that girl. So keep your that girls in mind if you have them this month.
You know what it's scary does is it reminds me of the multiple times I've been that girl. Not just once,
we've
but
all done
multiple.
It,
like, I could relate to all of these.
I've never
that's
done one.
That's frightening.
I've never.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to start collecting data from your wife. Let's
hey, if
see.
You've been that girl, like, who was it that broke the window? Oh, Mary, if you've been that girl like Mary, you're going to be very happy to know that it's National Get Out of the Doghouse Day. So if you're in the doghouse with your spouse, it's automatically forgiven today. It's National Get Out of the Doghouse Day. And it's also National Junk Food Day. So after you get out of the doghouse, you're going to have junk food and wallow in your misery. That's it for today. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Actually, technically, you could take your junk food into the doghouse.
You could. Yes, that's true. That's true.
Tying it all together.
Well done. Tomorrow, we are going to have, I think we're dark tomorrow, actually. But then on Wednesday and Friday, we're going to have some episodes for you. So get your weird news in to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com and your ads in for Jennifer for really bad ads at jennifer@horseradionetwork.com.
You know how you just named a day? I would like to give a little information before we go to our listening audience, which you said is 95% women.
Yes.
And my friend Larissa sent me this and just wanted to let everybody know that, you know, that some of us are going through perimenopause or menopause, and it's like a negative word, and it's just, you feel bad. So I would like to rebrand perimenopause and menopause. And we've now officially called perimenopause and menopause cougar puberty. That's right. Cougar puberty right now. That's really hard to say. Cougar puberty.
It is hard to say.
I'm in. It's okay.
CP.
I'll write it down. We need shirts for Team Cougar Puberty.
I love that. We probably sell them. One of these days we'll get around to doing all the shirts we keep saying.
All right. I just start making a list.
Auditors, hang on. We're going to chat with you for a couple minutes after about some random stuff.